Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, this is Mickey Desai. I'm your host for this episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. I have on the line with me today Michael Gale. Michael is the Director of Programs for Global Giving. We are revisiting with Global Giving. We did an excellent episode with Sandrina De Cruz a couple weeks ago, and I'm glad Michael's at the table because I think there's a lot more to talk about in terms of what Global Giving does and how they do it, and I'm hoping that some of what you guys do can serve as a model for other nonprofits. How are you, Michael?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm quarantining here at home in Alexandria, Virginia with my wife and my five-year-old. So if we're interrupted by someone coming in screaming about the Legos they're building, I apologize in advance.
That's okay. Normally it's me doing that. So, so can you tell us very quickly, what does it mean to be the Director of Programs for Global Giving?
Sure. So Global Giving, we are a crowdfunding platform for nonprofits. We also do a bunch of other grant making and support services for our partners. We work with about 3,000 organizations based all over the world. And so I coordinate all the work of the program team, which includes the work we do to help those organizations raise more money online, as well as a lot of programming we run to help connect them to each other. So we do a lot of peer learning networks, mentoring programs. We also, in non-pandemic times, have a program where we go and visit our partners in person to get to know them, get to know their work on the ground up close. And at times of disaster, like we're experiencing right now with the COVID-19 pandemic, the program team coordinates very closely with our disaster response team, which Sandrina works on, to make sure we are not just supporting the regular operations of our partners, but also special programming or operations they're running to respond in times of disaster.
I am reading here that you worked in Latin America as a program officer for another grant-making organization. How does your work with Global Giving differ from the work you did with that other entity?
That's a great question. Well, for me, it was a fairly natural transition. I worked for about 6 years with the Global Fund for Children as a program officer for Latin America and the Caribbean. So I was working with small grassroots nonprofit organizations, about 60 of them, throughout the region. And it was actually through some of those organizations that I got to know Global Giving. We had been providing them small grants for a number of years, and they had connected with Global Giving independent of us to start raising money from past volunteers who'd moved back to the U.S. or to connect with some corporate partners that Global Giving was working with. And so it was kind of through those organizations that I got connected with Global Giving, which has been fun because I've got to stay with some of the same grantees I worked with now 12 or 13 years ago at Global Fund for Children are still our partners at Global Giving, which has been a cool transition to make. But really, it's been just scale. So moving from supporting a network of 60 partners, which at the time seemed like already way too many to keep up with all the time, to now working with 3,000 plus organizations every year. It's really been learning a lot about how to use technology to scale programs and services and funding while still trying to keep that human element. You know, I still want to know what our partners are up to, what challenges they're facing. So how you balance that that human connection with scale has been, I think, the biggest challenge, but also an exciting thing about the change to working at Global Giving.
Well, let's see if we could talk a little bit more about that in terms of using technology and the danger of perhaps losing your humanity while you use technology. Or, and maybe I'm speaking too soon, do you think that there is a danger? Mm-hmm. Do you think there is a danger of losing one's humanity with the pursuit of technology? Or is technology simply enhancing the way we can be more human to each other?
Yeah, it's super important. You know, my one of my old bosses used to say in our line of work, no stories without numbers and no numbers without stories. And I think about that a lot because it's really easy when you're looking for a tech forward nonprofit like Global Giving to have your work turn into a dashboard, to think about site visitors, you know, average donation size, number of new nonprofits, you know, accessing a webinar that we're offering, and just have it turn into a bunch of data points. And that's all really important, especially when you're thinking about the, you know, the business side of running a nonprofit, to make sure you're getting the good market signals that what we're providing is of value. But it can't go without the stories. And so I still think it's important for me to get on a phone call with a partner in Rwanda to understand more about the work they do. It's still important for me to get out and visit partners. And then we also think that collecting more than just even that one-on-one conversation with them is so valuable, but finding ways to collect more in-depth partner feedback about what we're doing. So we're trying to keep a real focus on making sure we're listening to our partners. And that's, it goes beyond just surveys, but, you know, trying to do, you know, I think we're a little bit ahead of the Zoom curve. So using the technology to be our friend, using breakout rooms, trying to connect with people on a one-on-one level. We like to say we are a partner, not a platform. And a lot of that goes just understanding our partners' needs beyond the way they interact with the website.
Right. No, it's in your case, it clearly sounds like that technology is a way to actually enhance the stewardship of those relationships on a very personal level.
I think so. I think that there are still challenges. You do have to make sure you're not getting that important stories aren't getting obscured by the data. But I think working to find that right balance.
Right. So, which leads me to my next question, which is, do your partners need to also be technologically savvy?
Yes. So it's a challenge, although I think it's becoming less and less of a challenge with every passing year. So we try to give guidance when we're talking to potential partners about what kind of the bare minimums are. So you need to work with Global Giving, you need to have regular access to the internet. It doesn't need to be constant. So we have some partners where that means it's, you know, a motorcycle ride to the next town, an internet cafe once a week to check in for an hour, to thank their donors, update their project on the site, maybe can watch a webinar recording. So that's sufficient, but it kind of needs to at least be at that level. We try to make the site as quick to respond in all geographies as we can. We try to make resources available offline. So we do things like every webinar we do live, we always record. So folks who don't have, you maybe can't stream, but can take, you know, a jump drive to the internet cafe to download and then watch it at home later. That's sufficient. But we do still know it's a deal breaker for some organizations that we'd love to reach, but we just have to recognize the limitations of what we can do as a tech-enabled platform. That we can try to lower that barrier as low as we can, but it's always going to be there to a certain extent.
Right. So I'd like to turn the conversation back towards what Global Giving is doing in times of SARS-CoV-2, COVID-19. We talked before with Sandrina about her work with the Disaster Recovery Network, response work that she does. Can we talk a little bit for a moment about the micro grants program that Global Giving does, and can you share some examples of how your partners are benefited by that program?
Sure. So we realized, I think this was late March, it was our office's first week of you know, full remote work after we left the DC office. And we were just hearing from our partners on the phone and over email in our Facebook group we maintain for our partners, that even if they weren't directly affected yet by the pandemic itself, or they weren't themselves, you know, frontline responders, that all of their operations were being affected. So this was organizations who had to cancel fundraising events. You know, a lot of nonprofits rely heavily on in-person fundraising, whether it's a gala or a street team or door-to-door, or just being able to walk out to the coffee shop to meet with someone, a potential donor. And so they were all pivoting and they were all worried about their finances. And then programs that had been running in person were having to move online. People were having to rethink their entire game plan for how they were accomplishing their program. And this is everything from education to vocational training to programs caring with domestic animals, wild animals, kind of across the board of the nonprofit sector, people were having to adapt. So again, we were working with thousands of organizations. We had limited resources. We were trying to prioritize most of the grant funding that was coming in from donors to those frontline COVID responders. But we knew we needed to do something to be responsive to our other partners who were not directly responding, but were definitely affected. So we launched quickly this micro grants program. We seeded the program with $100,000 of some flexible funding we had. And then we've raised to date almost an additional $200,000 more from other funders to help support this initiative. So we've awarded about $281,000 grants. We did a really simple grant application. Tell us in three sentences or less how you're affected and what you need. And based on that, we've been awarding these grants. So we had an application period of about 2 weeks. We got just under 1,000 applications. So we've only been able to fund about a quarter of those so far, though we're hoping to be able to fund more. Just a few examples of the kinds of things we've supported so far. An organization we're working with in Nepal called The Small World has provided safe housing and education to orphaned and vulnerable girls. They're using the micro grant to actually move their whole facility temporarily from a crowded area of Kathmandu, where they're normally based, to a facility in the countryside to make sure that the girls they're supporting can still have access to outdoor time while still practicing safe social distancing. So that's an example of, you know, the whole program had to be moved to stay safe in this time. Here in DC, close to our offices, an organization we work with called FAN works with at-risk young people, and they had to quickly adapt to running all digital programming, where they were doing in-person counseling sessions and mentoring sessions. And that meant making sure that folks who are living in traditionally underserved communities had access to internet and a Chromebook, and that they got their team of peer mentors trained up on how to operate in a digital space. So they received a $1,000 grant. We have a partner in Lebanon who works in one of the largest refugee camps. And they're experiencing a situation where it's hard for those folks who already were having so many difficulties because of a recent economic and political crisis that's going on since September, even more challenges accessing employment, accessing food. So they're just responding by making sure people who are in need are getting boxes of food delivered to them in the camp. And then we have a number of partners who work with at-risk communities or vulnerable communities who've had to pivot their programming really to focus on information dissemination about COVID-19. So this includes a group in Guatemala, Asociación Estrella de Mar, who's communicating about COVID-19 in local indigenous languages to make sure important safety and health information gets out, to a group in Kenya around Nairobi and Homa Bay who works with the deaf community, and they're deploying networks of sign language interpreters to help spread health and safety information to communities who maybe aren't able to get it on the radio or other ways that the government's distributing information. And then I think a really challenging situation, we have a number of partners that work with victims of domestic violence, abuse, or exploitation. Those organizations are facing particular challenges right now, trying to support folks who are oftentimes now trapped at home, essentially, with perhaps their abuser. So they're trying to pivot their programming, you know, getting folks emergency access to phones and data access so they can stay in touch with people who may be at risk. So we have a couple of groups like that who've received micro-grants from us recently also.
One of the things we've been saying on the Nonprofit Snapcast is that by and large, every nonprofit's mission still remains relevant. And part mm-hmm. of the challenge is, you know, how do you take that message to your existing donor base? Because I think, you know, in general sense, the pandemic merely punctuates and underlines and punctuates the current need, right? It's yes. nothing has changed. It's made it just a little bit more stark contrast as to what exactly has to happen. But you have also said to me in the past that that nonprofits are at the forefront of community responses all over the planet, right? But correct. Still many of those nonprofits are also suffering. So Global Giving is in a great position to help those, you know, to help other entities, but how do we help individuals working in nonprofits who maybe aren't as fortunate?
Yeah, I think that's a great point, and I think we haven't figured out the answer yet. We know part of it comes from just being human and flexible and understanding. So we've tried to do things like extend report deadlines or application deadlines for things, made the option available to convert past grant funds from Global Giving that were project specific into general operating funds so they can use those resources where they're needed most, because your 1 year work plan that you launched in January is looking a lot different now. We know that for every organization. But I think also trying to find ways to support not just things at the organization level, but also things at the individual level, that these are all people running these nonprofits now from their houses in most cases around the world. And they're having all the same challenges that the rest of us are, trying to balance perhaps reduced income for their family, childcare challenges, mental health strains, not able to go see friends and family or access the support they normally get. So just trying to be cognizant of that and just give everyone a lot of grace. I think that's been the key word with us on our staff, is grace, and just giving people the benefit of the doubts, trying to be flexible. I think that's particularly important right now.
Absolutely. And on a personal level, what would you suggest that the rest of our nonprofit peers may do just to maintain their mental health and their spirits during these times?
There are a lot of great resources out there. And I think one thing is that the whole sector has really come together at this moment. And so, if a quick Google search, I've done this, of mental health support for nonprofit professionals, you'll find 3 or 4 webinars. I just took a great course from the Management Center, which is a group here in DC that does management training for nonprofit folks. It was a 2-hour course. It only cost $75. And it was all about how to support teams in this environment. So both remote managing tips, but also, how do you make sure when you're checking in with your team, you check in on how they're doing personally, and just be at least an outlet for folks to share what their challenges are. Whether it's something that, I can address or the organization can address, we can see, but at least being that sounding board for folks to listen to, to be heard, I think is super important. So trying to keep those points of connection with teams, I think is really important right now.
Agreed. I spoke with the local exec at our local Boys and Girls Club here in Atlanta, and she said that as soon as pandemic hit and they all started to work remotely, they tried to have their first Zoom meeting, and they could tell that it was just a little stiff, right? Mm-hmm, and so mm-hmm. I can't remember who it was, but they said, look, let's just stop this and talk to each other for a second.
Yes.
And they said that greatly improved things for that meeting. So
great.
Yeah. So what would you say are the lessons learned, or what can you share with other nonprofits as things that we can learn from this episode moving forward?
I think I always, every day I try to find a couple silver linings about this crisis, for everything from, I'm having a lot more Lego building time with my son than I thought I was going to get, this spring, which has been great. And I think I'm appreciating being outside in my garden or going on walks in my neighborhood more than I ever did. And on the work side, on the nonprofit side, I think I've seen, this is certainly true for us, there's an imperative to question what has been standard operating procedure right now. So there was nothing ever stopping us from offering an extension on reporting in the past, but we didn't do it. But this has forced us to. We typically didn't grant extensions in bulk for renewal application to work with Global Giving. We hadn't given kind of blanket permission to convert project funds to operating grants in the past. So I don't know if we will keep all of those practices in place when things start to return to normal, but I hope we at least question whether they need to go back to normal. And I've seen this happen at other foundations. There's been a number of kind of sign-on letters that foundations are signing on, saying, here's how we're going to adapt our policies and our practices during COVID. And a lot of those things that we're pledging to do right now are just good operating procedures for folks supporting the nonprofit sector in general. So I think it's a chance for us all just to question past assumptions, think about ways we can make our work more flexible, more resilient to future crises, and more responsive to the needs of our partners. So I think thinking of it as a forced learning opportunity for the sector is kind of what how I'm trying to mentally frame it for myself.
I like the way you say that, a forced opportunity for the sector, and sort of a forced way to innovate and take a look at old versus new and how exactly. New can be better going forward. I think that's absolutely right. Michael, this is excellent stuff. And I'm sorry that we're out of time. If a listener wanted to drop you a line, and if it were appropriate to do so, how would you suggest they do that?
Yes, that'd be great. Love to hear from folks directly, and I can route them where they can be best served based on where the possible connection is. So happy to share my email. It's mgale@globalgiving.org. If you're interested, if you are working at a nonprofit, interested in joining the Global Giving community of nonprofits, if we can help you out with a crowdfunding campaign, or if you want to learn more about the microgrants program, the way we work with corporate partners around the world, you can go to globalgiving.org/apply and start the application process there. We accept applications from nonprofits on a quarterly basis. So I think the next application deadline is coming up end of July to get up and running on the site by September. So we'd love to invite anyone to check us out there. And if you want to learn more about our COVID response, if you just go to globalgiving.org, you can see our large response effort. It'll be pinned to the homepage, I'm sure, for a number of weeks and months to come.
Yep, absolutely. I've visited the resource. Thank you, Michael. Thank you for taking the time to do this episode with me today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Mickey.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us for this episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast, brought to you by the Nonprofit Snapshot. We will join you again with another episode in a few days. Thanks very much.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.